Welcome back to Teal Town Conversations, brought to you by TealTownUSA.com. If you like what we do here, hit the little red subscribe button below. It helps us a lot. Also, check out the website, social media, all that good stuff. If you want to know about my social media, no idea why, you can find me on Twitter at ChrisJWS. So today, I have a guest here. You might have heard of him if you follow the Sharks. He is the man, the myth, the legend, Mr. Kevin Kurz. How you doing, buddy?
Good, Chris. How are you?
Awesome. I appreciate you taking the time. So to give a little background here before we get into it, there's been, you know, Twitter exchanges over the years, but more recently there's been a good number of ones, little barbs thrown about analytics and spreadsheets and all that fun stuff. So I wanted to kind of clarify with you a little bit about what you think about analytics and just, you know, media, fan media, because I know a lot of it comes from people like me who are who consider ourselves, well, I wouldn't say journalists, but we follow the team very passionately and tweet about it and write about it and podcast, of course. So I guess the just to start out, to clarify, do you hate analytics?
No, of course not. You know, I think there's, you know, from someone in my position, you try to gather as much information as possible. And that certainly is one side of the argument. So no, I hate it. And of course not. You know, I think there's always, you know, different ways to look at things. And that's certainly one of the angles that you got to come after information at.
In the whole eye test versus analytics, do you kind of fall 50-50 or are you kind of more analytics help, or what do you think?
Yeah, I'm more towards the eye test, I would say, but you know, that's also combined with you know, talking. I can just tell you the last two head coaches here in San Jose that I've dealt with on a day-to-day basis would say the same thing. You know, especially a guy like Todd McClellan, I think he was certainly looking at those types of numbers, and Pete DeBoer, I'm sure, does the same thing. But you know, those two coaches, they're not slaving away, you know, looking at Microsoft Excel sheets and plugging up numbers on a calculator. I can tell you they're both more gut instinct guys, and they're two guys that have had pretty good success in their careers as longtime coaches here. So, you know, I think that's the most important point to make, is that, you know, the more hockey people you talk to, the more you realize that while analytics is an interesting, you know, a lot of times it's interesting to debate, you know, online or in social media or just in conversations. At the end of the day, most of these decisions that are being made, especially by the day-to-day guys, the coaches in the dressing rooms are more based on, you know, player performance and just what they're seeing out there on the ice than, you know, what a guy's Corsi might be.
Yeah, that's understandable. I think that one of the things that seems to be commonly misunderstood is I think it's better for macro decisions than micro ones, like making your day-to-day lineup change a little less than
who
you draft, who you sign in free agency. You know, if you see a guy who might be undervalued in the free agent market because he doesn't look great, but he consistently performs, you know, the numbers say he's a lot better than he may look on the ice, because there's guys who play ugly, obviously, and don't look that great, but somehow get results, and, you know, vice versa. So you mentioned a little bit about, you know, the coaches and how they don't really spend a lot of time on that. Do you know if the Sharks org, what the general position of the org is? I assume since they are SAP and all that, they probably make at least some decent use of analytics farther in the front office.
Yeah, you know, a lot of teams, they do keep that stuff secret, and the Sharks are no different. You know, you don't want to give away your trade secrets or offer too much information as to what you're doing behind the scenes. I'm sure they look at that stuff, and I'm sure Doug Wilson and, you know, he's got some people up there in the front office, Joe Will, I'm sure, that are taking that sort of stuff into account, no doubt about it. But, you know, in terms of if you're not going to find a detailed explanation from any team as to what they're doing and what they're not doing, just because they do like to keep that stuff close to the vest. But I do believe there is a fair amount of that stuff, you know, being done in the front office when they're making decisions on guys, especially guys coming in from the outside, free agent additions that you might be looking at.
Yeah, for sure. And I guess one thing I've noticed in recent years, because about 5 or 10 years ago, I barely even knew what Corsi or any of that stuff was, even though I followed hockey for a long time. Is it just me, or does it seem like it's become more and more mainstream? You see it referenced on broadcasts now.
Oh, yeah.
You see a lot of that stuff.
Yeah, I think the shot attempt stuff for sure. And you know, the NHL, of course, took a more, involved approach with that too, with the stats that they keep on their websites with the shot attempts and the shot attempt percentage. And, you know, people like me, we look at that stuff quite often, especially I think for guys that might not be high-end offensive producers. You want to see how much time they're spending in their own end and whatnot. I think it's absolutely become more mainstream. But I also think there was a time, maybe about 2 years ago, where it got overblown a little bit. And I think, as teams started to hire more analytics guys, I think the narrative started to become, well, that's become more important than what we're actually seeing out there on the ice. And I think that was coming from a lot of places in the blogosphere especially. But, what I would suggest is, and I think this has happened, was to pump the brakes on that a little bit, because as important as that stuff might be, and as interesting as it might be, and as, how much information it might provide as to how you look at a certain player, at the end of the day, these guys are being judged more on how they look, I think, to their coaches in a day-to-day, how they practice, how they perform in certain situations. That's stuff that is still more important, I think, than any coach, because let's take a training camp for example, or an exhibition game. I think basically those sorts of stats are just a supplement to what they saw on the ice. It's not when the coaching staff is going into the dressing room after the first intermission, they're not talking about who had a good Corsi or who had a good Fenwick. They're talking about who played well out there, who deserves more ice time, who might deserve less ice time. And then they can look at those stats to either support or, contradict what their overall feeling is, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I understand what you mean. I think in game it can have some value, usually on the more extreme ends, because one game is kind of a small amount of data. But if you see one guy getting buried in his end constantly, I think that's something that more coaches should really act on when they see that. And I assume that the eye test usually will show that as well, though.
Yeah,
not always, but it tends to.
Right. Yeah, I would agree with that. And if you take certain players, for example, I know Roman Polak was a guy that got a hard time or was, criticized, especially last year after the Sharks went out and got him. And if you're taking his performance in the Stanley Cup final by itself, absolutely he deserved the criticism. He was awful in that series, right? But he also, before the Sharks got there, they needed another big body back there on that blue line. They needed a guy that I think other teams, created that fear in the other teams to go in the corner, a guy that would be tough, a guy that would finish his hits, a guy that would stand up for his teammates. And in some of those more heavy Western Conference Final series, like the LA Kings and the St. Louis Blues, he was a valuable player. And, Pete DeBoer and anybody in that Sharks dressing room would have told you that. To me, the mistake was, from the coaching standpoint, not limiting the minutes of a guy like Roman Polak when he was getting completely exposed by the Penguins. Why is he out there playing 12 minutes a night when you're in the Stanley Cup Finals and you should just be riding your top four D-men? Play those guys 23, 24 minutes a night, because you just can't afford to throw a guy like Polak out there against the Penguins, and that never happened. So, that's obviously just one example.
Yeah, agreed. And I think that's something where a lot of the numbers support what you say there, where he was, he was a little bit of a liability at times in those other series, but really in the much slower style the West has been playing,
right,
largely for, the more plodding, heavy style, he wasn't really a big liability there. But when the Penguins, with all their speed, came, and they just did it again this year. I mean, they are fast again in lanes. I think, to me, one of the more useful analytic tools, I'm sure you've seen like the heat maps and all that, because that to me explained a lot about what went wrong with the Sharks power play this year, where if you look at like previous years, you see a very even shot distribution, especially point to point. And yeah, this absolutely. Year, you see a huge spot. I'm going to give you one guess where that spot is, but you see one huge spot where a lot of shots are coming from and a lot of shots are getting blocked.
But where Brent Burns is, I would imagine.
So.
And that's certainly, you know, again, that's certainly part of it when you look at that sort of stuff. But, you know, I don't think that would be news to the coaching staff to see that. I'm sure they're watching that. And you know, the problems with the power play were obviously significant this year.
Yeah, that was a huge, huge drop off. And obviously, some people could probably, the eye test could tell you that as well to some extent. But yeah, that definitely, you look at the charts and it just sticks out like a sore thumb. You can see such a difference, because, you know, you can literally compare one year or the next. Like, you can look at the shapes and you see the shapes every year before that very similar until this year, when suddenly there's just a very big shift that direction. I think the Penguins exposed that a bit in the Cup final last year, because that's, I think, where it started, where it happened to be a lot of Brent Burns taking a shot. They always just got in front of it. They knew he was taking that shot every single time. And it got worse as the year went on. I think more and more teams picked up on that.
Yeah, which is surprising that they never really made any adjustments to the personnel. And again, that, you know, you question the coaching staff there. It's a valid criticism. You know, why were they running the same five guys out there for basically 90% of the season when there wasn't much puck movement? They were probably predictable and ineffective.
And this is probably a discussion for another time, but with the coaching staff changes coming through right now, with the news about Bob Bubner and all that. So that's gonna be interesting to see what happens there, especially in light of, I think it's Steve Spott, who's a special teams coach. I'm sure there's questions about him as far as the performance of that last year. So,
He's coming back. That much has been confirmed already by Doug Wilson, but the Bubner, vacancy obviously is going to have to be filled, and I would imagine they're going to look for a defensive-minded coach, because keep in mind they're not just losing Bob, but they're also losing Larry Robinson, and Larry worked a lot with the defensemen, both on the NHL team and in the system. Not as much because he lived in Florida and he wasn't around all that much, but he was still certainly an asset to those guys.
For sure. So I alluded to earlier about how kind of things have changed a lot in the last 5 to 10 years, really, with analytics, but also, the advent of all kinds of blogs and other media and podcasts and stuff. And you've been in the industry, what, about 15, 20 years now, I think?
Oh, well, I'm not quite that old, but getting close to that. Yeah, 13 years, I guess it is.
Okay. Yeah, it's, decent amount of time. So, I mean, you've really had to witness that, because, I mean, the game is completely different from when you started now, would you say?
The game or the media coverage?
I guess when I say the game, I'm referring to the way media coverage. That's kind of not necessarily the best in this context. Sorry about that.
It's interesting. When I was in Philly, really, we were the first team that sent a reporter, I guess, so to speak, on the road to create content for our own site. And actually, when the Kings were implementing their their insider, who is John Rosen now. It was, I can't think of the guy's name who was before him, but Rich Hammond. I actually got a call from the VP of communications with the Kings asking me how, we implemented all that in Philadelphia. And it's just kind of gone, grown over the years like that. And now teams are hiring their own guys. Scott Burnside, obviously, in Dallas. Somebody with Vegas in Vegas now. I can't quite think of his name right now, but he just got hired. So that's one change, is the teams basically covering themselves. And it's always interesting to me to see how much leeway they get. Like, how much is Scott Burnside going to be able to write about the Dallas Stars if they're playing like crap? We'll find out. But obviously with the other blogs and the blogosphere, I mean, I don't follow the other sports too much in depth in that regard, but it seems to me that the NHL has a pretty vibrant community when it comes to, that sort of stuff, which is great.
Very, very passionate, I'm sure, is one way to describe it. And I'm sure you've gotten your share of that passion over social media.
Yeah, that's all right.
During games, but, I think, I imagine... And I get my share of people rabbling at me and I'm nobody. So I can't imagine how much hate you get, including from people like me. But, you know, it's sometimes it's a little hard to kind of discern the two. But, it's understandable. I just thought of it. There's a lot of people now, ex-Fear the Fin people, who actually work for the Sharks now in media as well.
Yeah, there's a couple. Yep. I know John's there, so in their PR department. Yeah.
Yeah, John and I think there's one or two others. I forget who. Yeah. I know a few. Yeah, kind of launched through there. Jason, I think it was Jason Taylor.
Jason Plank. He left.
Plank. Yes. That's right. Yeah. Name moved on eventually, but I mean, it's interesting. There's definitely quite a pipeline of enthusiastic people who, and it seems like it's a good way to make. You can actually make your career that way now too. Would you say? Because I don't think 10 years ago, people looked at a blogger that seriously.
Yeah, I mean, you really got to be dedicated to it for sure. I've seen people come and go, and they kind of, they're kind of into it, but maybe not 100%. But that's true with anything. I could always tell too when I was in Philly and PR and hiring. I have to hire the interns, and you could tell within the first week or two which ones really wanted to be there, really wanted to make a career out of it. I had one kid, and he came in, and it was, he just worked his ass off, and you could tell he really wanted to make something of himself. And he's now the vice president of communications for the Denver Broncos. So, it's always get your foot in the door somehow, some way. And I think there are more options now to do that, especially with, when you can create your own blog or you can, utilize the different forms of media to make your voice heard.
Yeah, exactly. So two questions here to wrap it up. First of all, sure. What does Kevin Kurz do in the offseason?
our station's going through a little bit of a transition period now where we don't have as much TV, but we're trying to get more into the social media digital stuff. So, I'm trying to figure out what's going on there. In the offseason, you follow the news as it comes. And you take some time off. So, I tell people, they're like, it must be great you get summers off. I said, yeah, that's great. But I also really don't have a full weekend off for about a 9-month span, depending on how far the playoffs go. So it kind of balances out a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. Because, I imagine being on your grind. Because, we do a bunch, we do a lot of podcasts and we're all part timers and stuff. And it gets tiring for us. And this is, this ain't our day job. So I can totally understand that. Second question, what is your favorite city to go to for, when you're following them on the road?
Yeah, it's probably Montreal. The best way I can describe going to Montreal for a hockey game is it's like an NFL football game in Oakland every year, or Santa Clara anymore, but San Francisco, how it used to be, or Philly, where I come from. Just the energy in the building is just, it's unmatched anywhere else in the league. So that's probably my favorite, just when the whole experience, when you're talking about the whole experience, because the rink is right downtown. It's in a great location. From our perspective, the press box is right over the ice, so you get a great view of the action. Again, the energy in the building, and just some of the legends you see kind of floating around there every once in a while, whether it's in the media room or just kind of roaming the back hallways. You're just basically in the hockey capital of the world, really, between there and Toronto. But Montreal to me has a little bit more of an extra added appeal. But there's a lot of good cities. Maybe one that people don't think of is Minnesota. That's probably my favorite building in the league. I just think it's a beautiful building. I think it's a good crowd. It's a good hockey atmosphere. Everybody's so nice there. So that's one of my favorites. There aren't really too many bad ones. And I won't mention any of the bad ones, but you can probably figure it out.
I could probably guess. Yeah, I guess the only downside of Minnesota is that long drive from the airport. But I'm sure there's worse ones than that.
Yeah, or, it can be a little chilly there too sometimes.
It gets like 20 below sometimes. Come on. That's not
I'll
that
tell you, like, Edmonton obviously used to be a place where you weren't really looking forward to going there, but now with that team and the new building, and they're building up the surrounding area around Rogers Center there. Is that Rogers Center or Arena? I always get the two confused, and whichever one's not in Vancouver.
I think, is it Rexall, or am I wrong?
Well, no, Rexall, no, they closed that.
Oh, no, last no, year, no. Yeah.
than the new one now. Yeah. So, yeah, that's an area that I think is up and coming a little bit for sure. So,
and I think everything up there is Rogers by this point, but
yeah, it feels like it.
All right, cool. Well, I appreciate you joining me, and I'm sure I will get some hate for, like, why didn't you demand to know more about why he hates analytics? But, you know,
I don't hate them. Silly, but, you know, sometimes people, I'll say two things on that point. One, every once in a while, it's fun to just take a little shot at some of those guys that only look at analytics and want to, you know, they think they're smarter than the coach and the general manager because one guy's Corsi is better than another guy's. I mean, that's the sort of stuff that makes people like me shake their head. But two, you know, again, it's an important, a lot of that stuff is important and it provides deeper perspective. And that's all any of us is looking for at the end of the day is try to get a more well-rounded picture. But that said, the most important tool from, you know, that people like me use is talking to people every day. And it's not just what you see in the media scrums. It's not just what you read online. It's conversations that are off the record with former players, with people that have been around this game forever. So, you know, that opinion, you know, my opinion and the opinion of other people that I think are in my position that maybe don't look at analytics as an end-all be-all, it's just based on experience. It's based on being in dressing rooms every day, you know, 6 days a week for the last 13 years and getting a sense of what people that know about the game a whole lot more than I do truly look at to, you know, form their opinions.
Well, I can say you kind of have my dream job there. I don't know though if I could handle it though. It sounds like it can be quite a grind.
Oh, no, I got no complaints. It's great. It's fun for sure.
Yeah, definitely. All right, cool. I appreciate you joining me. So with that, just wrap it up here. If you're new here, hit that little subscribe button. Thank you everyone for watching, and thank you for joining me, Kevin.
Okay, thanks.